And now, a man who campaigned against Barack Obama in all 57 states, Mark Gillar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. I am Mark Gillar. Our very special guest today is Kevin McCullough. He is a nationally syndicated radio talk show host. He is a nationally syndicated columnist. He's also a television pundit who appears regularly on Fox News and many other channels. He's here today to talk to us about his new book, No, He Can't, How Barack Obama is Dismantling Hope and Change. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark, good to talk to you.
Kevin, what motivated you to write this book?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I get that asked a lot. I didn't sit down one day with a goal of saying to the world, I want to write a book that just dogs the President of the United States. On an average day, I'm as patriotic as anybody else, and I take a lot of pride in my country, and I'm proud of our achievements and our historical accomplishments, and the fact that we even elected an African-American president, I feel like, is a significant historical mark. But since I was the first person to predict he would become president, I felt like that, you know, a couple of years into the presidency, it was time to take a critical analysis of the policies. And as I began to, just every 5 days, put stuff down on paper and just say, okay, this week into the presidency, where are we at? What do we get out of this week of the Obama administration? It became really obvious really quickly that we were on a very troubled path to anything but traditional American exceptionalism, economic growth, defense of our nation's security, and even the values that we hold dear. And so when Thomas Nelson came to me and said, you know, we think that you need to give this analysis to the masses, I said, okay, I will do it. It's not a fight that I came rushing to, looking to pick with President Obama. But I really do believe that there is a war that is being waged for the very future, both ideological and moral and values-based and economic and national security-wise, for the heart and soul of our nation. And that's the motivation behind No, He Can't. It's not meant to be a screed. It's not an Ann Coulter script that is just throwing bomb after bomb. It is a very hard-hitting, honest look at analysis of Obama policy, and it gives very genuine and real and proven suggestions of how to correct course. The question will be, does the administration choose that course? My guess is they probably will not.
You sort of answered my second question as well. I was going to let you know that I did finish the book last night. It was a very enjoyable read. And one of the things I love, you're more than welcome. And one of the things I really loved about it, Kevin, was that it was not a book that bashed. You simply lay out the facts. And in the end, you were even kind enough to put on a presidential advisor hat, and you gave 10 pieces of advice to Obama as to what you would recommend for him to do to turn this thing around if you were one of his advisors, which I thought was definitely a bipartisan type approach to it. You're like, hey, you're my president. I want you to succeed because I want America to succeed. And here are some things I think you need to do to make America a better place. It has to be, if I can borrow a term from Fox News, one of the most fair and balanced books I've seen. Albeit it's obviously critical of the president, it certainly holds out hope that he will change course and do the right thing.
Well, here's the thing, Mark, and I've always tried to live by this notion. I'm a long-standing, well-known conservative. People understand that I believe in limited government. I believe in a strong national defense. I believe that the moral values of who we are as a nation are some of the greatest reasons America is the nation that she is. But I also am not interested in getting into the contest that I see happening too often, sometimes in conservative media, but definitely from the left, I see this far more often, and that is this bomb-throwing, grenade-launching, destruction-at-all-costs kind of mentality in the political arena. I think two things happen when conservatives go down the path of just launching bombs instead of trying to find solutions. Number one, they're usually not successful, though they may be right on substance. Because of the style of attack, there are reasons why they're not ultimately successful. And one of those is that our nation is roughly divided into thirds. About a third of us are very far left and progressive in how we view the world. About a third of us are pretty far right and fairly conservative in how we view the world. And then there's this third that's in the middle that's kind of doesn't really know what it believes or why it believes. But it's whoever captures more people in that middle that ultimately is victorious in election after election. So what I want to do is I want to be an ambassador from the right that says, hey, here's why I believe we've got the best ideas. And I want to be an ambassador in such a way that even when I'm taking down a leftist opponent in a debate and I'm thoroughly beating him like the wicked stepsister that he is in substance, I want the rhetoric to be something that those who are watching, those who are observing, say, hey, you know what? He made the better point, but he was fair and he treated his fellow American in a kind way. And I think that embodies the best of what America is supposed to be.
I agree with you. I took the same approach. I have trouble getting liberals on this show, as you might imagine, with a name like the Tea Party Power Hour. But I had Dr. Caroline Heldman from Occidental on a couple of weeks ago, and my goal before the show was, hey, we're going to look for middle ground. We're not going to insult each other. And it ended up turning out pretty good with her agreeing to come back on the show. And I think it takes more discourse like that that's very civil, where you agree to disagree agreeably in order for us to get things done. Before we get into some of the things that Obama's...
Well, can I give you an example of what you were just talking about? I was on with Eric Bolling this week on Fox Business, and we were talking oil prices and gas and economy and so forth, and there's a young African-American lawyer, very good-looking, well-spoken guy in New York named Joey Jackson. He's a very fast talker, very, very quick on his feet, very good thinker. And he was representing the left, and I was representing the right. And as we were responding to the stuff of the day, Joey Jackson's kind of a filibusterer, and he'd kind of go on, and he'd do his fast speak and so forth. I'd wait for my turn, and then I would give him the response. And I think every time that I did, he was shocked at, to some degree, not just the substance of what I had, because it wasn't the typical stuff that he thought he was going to get, but then at the friendliness with which I engaged him in the debate. And at the end of the hour, in every commercial break, he was like, so why'd you write the book? And what's the name of the book? And wow, that's a pretty bold title. And he was so curious by it, but he was getting to know me as a person in terms of how I would treat him both on camera and off camera. And by the end of the hour, he's like, Kev, look, I really would like to read the book. Can you give me a signed copy? And then I went to sign it. He goes, no, put the date on it. Put the date on it, because I want to prove to people that it happened on a certain date and time. And I thought, that's just hilarious. But that's exactly what I think, in terms of what I bring to the national debate on this type of issue, particularly on the referendum that is the Obama administration. And as I've done it in the book, no, he can't. That's my goal. My goal is to be incredibly, cheerfully winsome, that drives the left, you know, crazy on substance, but that they really genuinely want to get to know better by the time we've had our friendly discussion. And I think if conservatives approached our discussion with the left along those lines more often, instead of telling them to get off the phone, you big dope, and all this other stuff, I think we would actually win more of the middle, because the middle is watching to see who is going to treat each other with the most amount of respect. And I would always want that to be those of us that come from the conservative perspective.
I agree with you completely. I am one of those people that likes to spend time in the blogosphere, spend time on Twitter. And I noticed you're following me on Twitter now, so I'm honored. Thank you. but at any rate, I assume that was just because you wanted to check this guy out before you went on his show. But I was having a conversation with a far-left liberal about 3 weeks ago, and taking an approach that's very similar to what you do, we were actually having a very meaningful discussion. And another person on Twitter actually commented, I can't believe this. You two are actually having an intelligent conversation without screaming at each other. This is amazing. So it doesn't happen very often, but it needs to happen more. I tell you what, before we get into the things that the Obama administration could have done better, why don't we back up and talk about how he was elected? Because this gentleman wrote a feel-good message of hope and change and yes, we can, into the highest office in our land and arguably the highest office in the world. People followed him like some kind of a magical Pied Piper. I'm wondering, do you think the magic has worn off, or will he be able to, especially in light of Osama bin Laden being taken down and the fact that he produced a birth certificate, do you think that he'll be able to pull off this magic a second time and get a second term?
I don't think the birth certificate is going to have any impact on the next election. I really don't think it had much impact on the first election, and I thought it was a general waste of time for people that were running around talking about it, because you had had several different sections of the United States justice system looking into it, judicial bodies, different courts at different levels, and they all came back, even the Supreme Court, with the same basic response: if the state of Hawaii certifies the birth, then we as the federal government are required to abide by what the state of Hawaii says. It was an exercise in federalism for the Supreme Court to allow what the state of Hawaii proclaimed to be the law of the land. And I actually am for a limited government, which gives more power back to the states and to local government. So it was a very consistent argument with me. And on top of that, I just felt like there were too many extenuating circumstances as to he had to have been born in the U.S. And so for my friends in the punditry circles that were arguing this nonsense, I just kept saying over and over again, guys, there's real reasons not to reelect him in 2012. Let's not get lost and waste our time on this. Will he be reelected in 2012? He will be if two things happen. If the Republicans nominate a very, very poor candidate, they're entirely capable of doing it. We saw that in 2008. We've seen it in previous years as well. And the second piece is the thing that I think that has helped Obama more than anything the last couple of weeks is not the birth certificate, but the taking down of bin Laden. And I think that if the Republicans and those that oppose the president don't make the case that a coherent national security policy must be continued beyond the bin Laden kill, that we continue to put al-Qaeda on the run, that we continue to hunt them out of caves and fish them out of holes, and when necessary put a bullet in their head for the sake of justice, then he has the opportunity to do something that Clinton did, and that is to triangulate an issue that is traditionally strong on the side of the right, and to make it his own. And I think that I think it's all in the messaging and in the messenger. So is it possible for him to win re-election 2012? You better believe it is. And Republicans had better fight like mad if they want to reclaim the White House in 2012, because I think he is every bit still as good on the stump as he was in 2008. And that's gonna convince a lot of people.
The only real difference I can see is that this time he has a record that he will have to defend, whereas last time it was all the hoopy changey stuff. Is that going to make it more difficult for him this time around?
Absolutely it will. He will have a difficult time getting reelected. I'm not saying that it's going to be easy for him, but I also am not encouraging Republicans to take it easy, because if they think that he doesn't have any more fight in the dog, that's just totally not true, and he will bring it. We've seen a little bit of sampling of that now that he's out on the trail a little bit, you know, in El Paso, Texas, day before yesterday, and different places that he's going, and he's talking about things. He does have a record. It is one that is going to be very hard to defend from any logical standpoint, but if you'll notice what great orators do, they don't get lost in the details. They capture people's hearts through big picture ideas, and he is very, very good at casting that. What the Republican candidate needs to do, by the way, is pin him to the ground on the facts, but allow a certain degree of personality and kind of charm and warmth come through in their own presentation. And I think that for that purposes, we don't have a very deep bench. The young guns, the Bobby Jindals, the Paul Ryans, these guys, still very young, still very nervous when they're in front of a camera, not real convincing sometimes in some of their responses, speeches that they've been given the opportunity to give on national networks. Having said that, the upper-tier candidates have baggage too. Sarah Palin, Mitt Romney, some of these guys have significant problems. Romney wrote Obamacare. He's not going to be able to escape that albatross. In his speech yesterday, he didn't say he was sorry for doing it. He said, no, I was absolutely right for doing it. Not the kind of thing that the Republican base is wanting to hear in their election speeches. Sarah Palin's negatives are at an all-time high. Part of the reason those upper-tier candidates do so poorly, I think, is that they get angry too easily when they should employ a little bit of quick thinking and learn how to turn things into humorous situations, respond with humor and less anger, and I think we would do a better job. And there are candidates that have the capability of doing that. Chris Christie, who has roundly said he's not going to run, is very good on his feet, could articulate things and keep levity in a situation that would otherwise turn pretty harsh. And I'll tell you, the man that does it the best is the one that came in second in 2008, and that's Mike Huckabee. Some hardcore conservatives are going to say, well, his record in Arkansas wasn't pure in terms of this or that. He's had 2 years to brand himself via the vehicle of Fox News and putting his policy ideas out there. And I think if he was given the opportunity to define his own candidacy, which he's going to have the opportunity to do if he decides to run, I think you're going to see a much different impression of who Mike Huckabee is, as opposed to the Mitt Romney subterfuge that was run through the National Review Online very dishonestly in 2008.
My take on Huckabee at times, though, is that he just doesn't seem aggressive enough. I mean, he's this incredibly easygoing guy, and he's so soft-spoken, and I think that may be one of the problems, is that you talk about some of the other candidates who get mad too quickly. Is it possible he should get mad more often? I mean, it just seems to be like
not when it comes to if he was campaigning against someone like George Bush, he would need to. But when it comes to campaigning against a Barack Obama, the worst thing a candidate's going to be able to do is to look too aggressive. The fact that he is able to sit on the front porch of a Black Baptist church preacher in Arkansas and have a cup of sweet tea, and the next weekend be doing his Fox News show on the weekends and kind of spanning the spectrum of people in between is really where his genius is. And if you go back to the debates of 2008, it's arguable that he only lost one of those of the seven or eight that they had, and that he won the rest of them on both the merit and on the presentation. And a large portion of that was his ability to incorporate humor. And when you would think, when John McCain would have steam coming out of his ears, Governor Huckabee was able to crack a joke. And at the end of the day, people walked away from the debate going, yeah, Mike Huckabee is someone that I could understand and relate to much better than some of the others. That didn't translate into votes, partly because I think Fred Thompson was paying John McCain a favor back in the South Carolina primary. There was no reason Fred Thompson should have been still in the race at that point. But his voters and Huck voters were almost identical in terms of who they were. And McCain beat Huckabee by a point and a half in the third primary. And Fred Thompson peeled off 16%. That vote would have easily broken 2-1 for Huckabee, and he would have beaten McCain in a landslide in South Carolina. Thompson won't run this time, and you don't have McCain. There's going to be a very different feel for who is out there. If Huck gets in, wins Iowa, Romney wins New Hampshire, Huckabee comes back and wipes up in South Carolina, and that puts him on a huge fundraising advantage headed into Florida and then the two Super Tuesday contests.
Now, you mentioned that the worst thing anyone could do when running against Barack Obama is be aggressive. Is that just due to the politically correct nature of our society and the fact that Obama's half African American?
I think partly, but part of it is that President Obama likes to play the smooth guy against the hostile guy. So when Hillary would be more frazzled in the debates in 2008, it always worked to his advantage because he was the ultra cool, nothing rattles my cage kind of guy. And it becomes easier for him when the person he's opposing gets frustrated or gets wound up. And McCain tried to keep it in lockdown on the debates in 2008, but I don't know that he was very successful at it because his facial expressions or things about it that just kind of gave it away that he was really, you know, quite wound up in knots. And I think one of the reasons that there's always the risk of playing the race card or whatever, but it's seldom done when someone is funny versus when someone is angry. Someone is more likely to call someone a racist if they come off aggressive and angry than they are if someone comes off with a joke that makes everyone laugh. And I think that's one of the advantages of someone who can keep their head opposing Obama in 2012.
Well, there are a few chinks in Obama's armor when it comes to his demeanor. And one of the things that I'll reference is when George Stephanopoulos asked him about his relationship with Bill Ayers. We saw that mask crack or slip, if you will. He seems to get very defensive when people question his decisions or his policies. And again, he didn't have anything to run on back in 2008. But I'm wondering if we're going to see the same smooth, cool Barack Obama as people point out the many mistakes he's made over the previous 4 years.
It will be a test for him, and I think it'll be an interesting one because he's never really been in that situation. But if his early campaign appearances are any indication, I think he's working really hard at maintaining the uber cool, Mr. Smooth, I got it all under control demeanor. Now, it doesn't mean he'll be flawless at it, and he may have significant challenges at doing it. But I think, again, if you put an angry opponent up next to him, it gives him the opportunity to not look so angry.
Right. Well, there's a big difference between making a campaign speech and actually having to debate someone and just watching his interaction with reporters.
But I will guarantee you there won't be any news agencies that question him about Bill Ayers in 2012. There were barely any that were willing to in 2008. And most of the media is going to be in the bag for Obama to begin with. So it's going to be the emphasis on how the candidate responds is going to be much more lopsided in the incumbent's favor. Obama's going to have more favor with the networks that are hosting the debates than the opponents. And the opponents are going to be the ones that are going to have to outthink both the press and the other candidate.
Well, in other words, nothing's changed from 2008.
Not in the media.
Pretty much. Right. Now, going back to the election, one of the things that amazed me is that this guy is one of the most pro-abortion guys out there, yet he got over 50% of the Catholic vote. There's never been anything about him that would make one think that he values Israel as an ally, yet he got over 50% of the Jewish vote. Is he going to be able to charm Jews, Catholics, and independents the way he did the last time around?
He's gonna work awfully hard at it. He also got a record number of evangelicals. He got roughly 47% of their vote as well. No hostily pro-abortion candidate has ever scored anywhere near that amount. And to be honest, there's not been a lot of people that could identify what his abortion policies were ahead of time with any kind of knowledge because the media gave them no information about it. People are much more well-educated now down the road. And I think, to be honest with you, Mark, I don't think this is going to be an election that turns on the moral, social issues. I do write about that. That's one-fourth of the book. The book is an examination of four critical areas: economy, national security, the values that we believe in, and the accountability that he has to we the people. I don't think the election in 2012 is going to turn on values, though I don't think values will work in his favor. It's going to be the economy. It's going to be, are people still out of work? One out of every 10 workers, are they still unable to find a job? One out of every five families, are they still working and still unable to pay their bills? Those two indicators are going to be the biggest, that and gas prices. Those three indicators are going to be the biggest things that he's going to have to worry about. And right now, I don't see, just doing my looking into the future here, I don't see how by maintaining the policies that he currently has and not making sharp reversals, I don't see how he keeps power on any of those three issues, given the fact that he promises that unemployment by this point in time in 2011 would be down to around 6%. The stimulus bill obviously was an abject failure, and we are paying the price for that in unemployment rates that are higher than he would like them to be, and certainly higher than what the American public is able to really withstand.
What was interesting about that is that the whole thing was one gigantic piece of pork filled with political payoffs. Yet even after everyone knew what was in this bill, he was able to make the following comment to a group of SEIU people in Ohio. Take a listen to this.
An unprecedented recovery act. And we did it without the usual Washington earmarks and pork barrel spending. And Ohio, it is working.
That's pretty astounding. It's pretty dishonest, but it's pretty astounding.
And they just clapped right along like a bunch of seals. It was amazing to watch that. The whole thing, I mean, I don't remember the exact date he made this speech in Ohio, but it was far enough after the public had gained knowledge as to what was in this thing that he shouldn't have gotten that response, but he did. And this goes back to the magical Pied Piper quality that I feel this guy has. He can stand in front of an audience, tell a blatant lie, and have the people go crazy as if Jesus himself had just spoken to them. I don't know that he's going to lose that quality in 2012. And you're telling people that it's possible he's going to be reelected. I've gone as far as to tell people it's probable he's going to be reelected if we don't produce a candidate that's capable of taking him on, and a candidate that will, capture the American people a little better than what we produced last time. Now, I don't get to do this very often, but I have to tell you, one of the fun things about doing this show is that as I'm reading the book, I know I'm going to get a chance to talk to the author within 24 to 72 hours. You posed a question in the book, and I'm actually going to answer it. You had asked, if 45% of American workers don't pay taxes, how do you give a cut to 95% of Americans? And math is not a strong point for Obama, and I've written articles on that. But let me tell you what the answer to that question is. Obama, perhaps not as good as Clinton's, it depends on what is, but Obama is a master at choosing his words carefully. You will note that at no point did he say he was going to give a federal income tax cut to 95% of the American people. He said he was going to give a tax cut. And what the left is saying to that is that he has cut payroll taxes, and that affects a lot more people than just pay federal income tax, and therefore the statement is accurate. What is your response?
I would say you've got it nailed. I mean, that's the sum total. And the more people that aren't paying taxes, the more that wreckage gets redistributed, the pain of those that are not producing being cared for by the ones that do. It's a tough thing, and it's another very inconvenient lie that the president has told repeatedly. But it's something that he doesn't get called on this stuff. And so if you don't have someone who says, "Look, is 1 + 1 = 2." You can't get away with this. And until the press themselves begin to argue those points, the White House is not forced to and won't. They will purposely continue to misrepresent all kinds of stats and figures throughout the election cycle. The truth is, though, the American people know what they're experiencing, and they know that their experience in their house right now, with sometimes multiple people working multiple jobs, they're not able to pay bills in one out of every five families. I don't know how a president gets reelected under those circumstances. I'm not saying it can't happen. I've just never seen it happen before.
One of the things I have to point out is the guy's just not good at math. I mean, he was speaking in Kansas one time, or he was speaking somewhere and referencing a natural disaster in Kansas. He said 10,000 people died, only 12 people had died. As you point out in your book, he said that a foot amputation costs $50,000. It really only costs about $500 to $700. He said that John McCain was running for George Bush's fourth term. He said that he had been to 57 states. He also said that thanks to Obamacare, that employers would receive a 3,000% reduction in their insurance premiums, having no mathematical knowledge of the fact that once you give someone a 100% discount, it would essentially be free. So in all fairness, he does tend to bungle facts and figures like that, but I just think it's a real weakness. He really shouldn't go on Jeff Foxworthy's Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader, because when it comes to math, I honestly don't think he is.
Well, and you know, it's ironic the brutal treatment that Sarah Palin received over not knowing some of the international leaders of very obscure countries that Katie Couric and others purposely tripped her up with. You know, having just only been a governor of Alaska, but they are almost completely ignore the constant mangling of specifics, as you pointed out, that President Obama makes, and he does this all the time. He just said this last week that we have never been pumping more oil in the history of the nation. The truth is that since 1970, we're off our peak production of domestic oil by nearly 50%. In 1970, we were doing about 10 million barrels of oil for a given period of time, and now we're doing, for that same length of time, about 5.1 million barrels of oil. It's totally not true. It's totally not the case, and yet he has made that statement in multiple appearances, and it is just flat-out wrong.
Well, we see that with a lot of things, not just in the area of mathematics, but I'm sure you'll recall the flap when a couple of bitter John McCain campaign staffers who were looking to pin the loss on something other than their own lack of ability said that Sarah Palin was so stupid she didn't understand that Africa was the continent. And the media, that frankly wouldn't have believed anything a John McCain staffer had said during the election, embraced those statements as if they were gospel. And I don't know whether Sarah Palin said them or not, but the media ran with it like it was true. In fact, I've got Nora O'Donnell at MSNBC saying whether it was true or not, it was just an amazing comment. And I thought, wow, whether it's true or not, Nora. And also, there is videotape of Barack Obama referring to Europe as a country. He actually said the problem with countries
Europe. I've seen that tape. Yeah.
And nobody cares. Nobody cares. I mean, with Sarah Palin, they were willing to take the word of an ex John McCain campaign staffer that she didn't know Africa was a continent. But when they have a video of Obama saying Europe is a country, nobody cares. It's absolutely amazing. Now, we're running a little short on time, but at the very end of the book, you give Obama some advice. You put on a presidential advisor hat, and in the interest of fairness, you're like, hey, if you're interested, here's some things you can do. Maybe don't go through all 10, but list some of the top things that Obama can do to turn the ship around.
Well, I think that we've touched on the very realistic problems that he has in his candidacy, and I think that there's nothing that he has as a problem that he can't seek to improve upon, and if he did, would benefit himself greatly. And one is, I think you call off the battle that you've been waging against the Tea Party. These are not radical, racist, ignorant people. They are not exclusively gun-toting, Bible-thumping jerks from the South. Tea parties happen here in Manhattan. They happen all over this country. These are people that are concerned about the size and scope of government. So make peace with the Tea Party and begin to walk away from the socialist, Marxist ideas that you've adopted in the past. I think that to make some degree of connection with the American voter, you've got to explain or walk back your faith stance when it comes to the harsh anti-faith views that you hold when it comes to things like marriage more transparent on some of these things. The biggest economic policy that he needs to change is to reverse his position on small business. In other words, stop being at war with small businesses and embrace policies that will help them. That would actually be his overall key to success, because if he was creating an environment in which small businesses were thriving, he would solve the unemployment issue almost overnight. Stop saying that our enemies aren't terrorists when they are. You know, you kill bin Laden, go kill the other terrorists that still need to be taken care of. Reform legal immigration, not illegal immigration. Build a southern border barrier. Make it serious. Stop taxing the people in the country that do the most to create new job growth, and that is the top marginal tax rate. Change your tone in terms of the global conversation from one of apology to the world's leaders to one of leadership. They coined this term in the Libyan conflict of leading from behind. Nobody leads from behind. The people that lead from behind are called followers. And usually they're the annoying ones because they think they're leading, and so they're talking to everyone like they are, but no one's listening to them because no one's behind them. Ask the American people to pray for you. Be humble in your approach to their trust. And then find a way to put these better policies together that expresses genuine faith and hope and a desire to see the people that he serves experience a better life. Not on an equal outcomes basis, but on an efficiency of effort basis. When you say, I wish to take great risk in the business world, you should be allowed to succeed or fail, parity to the amount of risk that you took. Stop being afraid of risk. Let small businesses risk. Let them heal the economy. We can do this. It's very doable. He could do it in the next year and a half. Will he? I'm somewhat suspicious of it.
Well, maybe you need to send a signed copy of No, He Can't to the White House and bookmark it for him so he doesn't get turned off by the title.
It's already been delivered.
Really?
Yes.
Any response yet?
No, none as of yet. But it was the first complimentary copy that I got. I stuck it in the mail, and I haven't heard from them as of yet.
Well, we'll watch for him when he's getting on and off airplanes to see if he's carrying it with him. Hopefully he will be. And tell the listeners where they can get a hold of a copy of your book, Kevin.
Yeah, well, you can get it on Amazon.com like all other books, and I appreciate people that do, especially if you're going to buy more than one copy for you know, your friends going into the 2012 election cycle. Mark, I don't know your feelings on it, but my feeling is that this should be required reading for anybody who plans on voting in the presidential election. It's just a real good primer for understanding what you've been given by way of an administration and understanding where some of the weaknesses are to what they've done thus far. So I think it's a great prep read for the election. But if you want autographed copies, or you would like a copy that is inscribed to someone specifically, maybe you've got a graduate, a Father's Day gift, a birthday gift coming up, go to my website, which is TheBingeThinker.com, TheBingeThinker.com, and click on the homepage there, and you can order an inscribed copy, and you can even, in the notes on the checkout page, you can tell me exactly how you would like me to inscribe the book for the person that it's going to, and then we'll get that off to you.
Yeah, fantastic. We're gonna put up links to both of those sites on our website so people can come to teapartypowerhour.com, click on the interview with Kevin McCullough, and we'll have both of those links there to make it really, really easy for folks to get a hold of a copy of your book. And also, tell people how they can listen to you on SiriusXM.
Yeah, actually, we're not on SiriusXM anymore. That part went away, but we are on some 243 terrestrial radio stations every morning, and we are also live on a television network called FamilyNet Television that is in the top 600 markets of the country. It's a cable channel, just like Fox News Channel. It gets cleared. It's the same lineup everywhere that it runs. But we're live 7 to 9 each weekday morning on there. It replays at 1 a.m. Eastern, which is 10 p.m. Pacific. So if you're tired of Leno and Letterman, give McCullough a chance and check us out. But all of the affiliate information where you can listen and how you can call in and be part of the show, it's all attached to the one website, TheBingeThinker.com. I work with the actor Stephen Baldwin. He and I run the media company that we operate together. He's used that word binge in front of another word that rhymed with thinker, but I thought we would take it in a different direction from the old days of the Baldwin bad boy behavior, and we reclaimed it. So it's TheBingeThinker, not drinker, .com, and I hope that people will come by and say hi.
Well, we'll do everything we can to encourage them to do that. That is all the time we have today, Kevin. I certainly appreciate you being here. As I said, it was a wonderful book. I finished it last night. I would encourage all my listeners to go out and get a copy of it. And as Kevin said, buy copies for your friends heading into the 2012 election. I would say buy copies for your liberal friends because they possibly need the book much more than some of your conservative friends because they probably haven't caught a lot of this on MSNBC and other networks unless they're big Fox fans, which most liberals are not. Again, Kevin, thanks for being here. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Sure, and if I can just make one last addendum to that, the best review that I've received of the book has come from a liberal. His name is Jas Shaw. He sometimes contributes to hotair.com. He has his own blog as well. But he actually, though not in agreement with me on most of the book, said that this book was so well written, so thoroughly argued, that it was hard to dispute the conclusions that I had come to. So having said that, Mark, thanks for having me on your show, and wish all of you and your listeners a God-blessed day.